Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good afternoon. This Tuesday afternoon of Stand in the Gap Today. This is Sam Rohr, and I'm with David Kistler today, who is in North Carolina. I am here at our flagship station in Pennsylvania. And Brother Gary Dahl, who is normally here with us, is not today because he's been called away on official pastoral duty. He's conducting a funeral, and so he's not going to be able to be with us today. So it's going to be Dave and I hope that all of you will stay with us throughout the balance of the program today. We had a great program yesterday. We really are encouraging folks who are, you all are listening, to contact your friends. Let them know about this program. Yesterday and the last few days, so we know that those listening by internet have really spiked. It's a significantly larger number. That's a good thing. And as well as those listening by actual radio signal across the state and so forth. So do talk to your friends. If you enjoy what you hear here, get that word out. Let them, you know, have them tune in. And we would ask you all to be praying with us as we are considering the going on additional stations across this country. We have some folks that are actively at work in the further syndicating of the Stand in the Gap Today program. That's a good thing. We've been praying for that, and there are a number of things that are in discussion right now relative to that. So for those of you who are listening and are interested in that, pray with us about that as we attempt to go forward to enlarge the voice of truth. Well, Dave, it's you and me today. And I know that you likely may not be here tomorrow because you're going to be conducting a funeral as well, you told me. And that's, you know, just the role of pastor is something that gets us involved in a lot of different things, is it not? And I just thought, you know, I mean, do you have any comments here relative to just about that before we get into the subject matter of the day, which I think is going to be a compelling discussion?
Well, Sam, it's a delight to be with you. And yes, I will just make a couple of quick comments, though I'm not actually a full-time pastor. I'm an evangelist. I did grow up in a pastor's home, and I do from time to time fill a very much, I guess, a pastoral role. But we had a gentleman in our community pass away, and because of the closeness of our family to him and to another family member that passed away, and I had a privilege of participating in that funeral, the family has asked me to be a part of this tomorrow, and it's an honor to do so. Just a great neighbor, wonderful gentleman that passed away. But you know, Sam, it's amazing as you step outside the four walls of your home and outside the four walls of the church, and you begin to involve yourself in the lives of people in your community, which is what really we all as Christians should be doing. It opens up all kinds of doors for you and avenues of ministry. And so this is one of them. And though I don't often conduct funerals, it is an honor any time I get a chance to do that. And so that's where I'll be tomorrow. But, you know, Sam, these are intriguing days, and we are living at a time when people are hurting, and they need the help of the Lord more than they need any other kind of help. And so I would appreciate your prayers tomorrow, the prayers of our listening audience, that God will give grace and wisdom as I participate in this somber, but yet what we trust will be a very celebratory time. If you know Christ as Savior, the parting from this life to the next is a celebration, not a sad time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that's very, very important. And Dave, you were talking about something there that I'm going to use to segue into what we're going to discuss today in this program, and that is people are hurting. People are confused in these days relative to what in the world is going on, and there is a thirst for leadership, for direction. And of course, we believe that that the pastor in the pulpit, having the responsibility to preach the word, having the profession, the calling of dealing with the word of God, ought to be the one standing up in these days and providing direction and leadership. And with that, I want to go forward into the discussion here for today, at least for a part of the program. And that's going to be, excuse me, picking up on the issue of what we talked about the last couple of days relative to the court hearing on Thursday and Friday, but particularly the one on Friday relative to marriage. Dave, you and I we've been a part of some conference calls. I was part of one this morning, about an hour and 15 minutes, about 100 pastors or so. One yesterday, folks from across the country discussing the implications of what happened, what the ruling means, what's going to take place as a result, what can we expect. And there are some, Dave, and you and I talked about this earlier, there's a presidential candidate, you may want to comment on it, who actually, I'm feeling there's a sense of some that, hey, let's get off this topic and let's get on to other things. And I'm not so sure that's what we ought to be doing just at this point. What was that reference you were talking to me about earlier?
Well, Sam, the gentleman who made the statement was John Kasich, and he is possibly going to be a presidential contender on the Republican side for 2016. And in essence, what he said was, it's a done deal. This issue has been resolved at the high court as of Friday when the ruling was made relative to same-sex marriage. And so let's move on. People want to talk about the economy. They want to talk about job growth. They want to talk about all these other things. And Sam, I think it's a real tragedy and a real travesty if we move beyond this highly important moral issue and on to things that, in my estimation, I believe in your estimation, and certainly in God's estimation, are of much lesser importance. Now, to the American people, economics is certainly an issue, but it should not be the issue. In fact, a bad economy is oftentimes not the cause of anything. It is a symptom of a much deeper spiritual problem. And so when you have a nation and the Supreme Court of a nation endorsing same-sex unions and same-sex marriage, you have a moral dilemma in a country that is sure to bring God's judgment on a nation. And so the economics, to me, at that point, are completely immaterial.
Dave, I totally agree with you, and that's why we're going to spend a little bit more time on this program on that regard, because we're not talking just about a moral issue. We're talking about a constitutional issue. I was on a program with someone yesterday, and they asked me the question, Sam, do you believe that we are in a constitutional crisis? And I said, well, it depends what you determine, define crisis to be, but if you determine it to be something that is of extreme significance of the moment, that produces a demand for some type of action and threatens the very underpinning, then we are. And I think that the court has in fact done that, Dave. So for us to leave this discussion and just move on, which is what the opponents of traditional marriage and the opponents of constitutional rule of law would like us to do, we do it to our harm. So we're not going to do that. We're going to dig into it a little bit more, Dave. And I want to go this direction here. We've talked about, and many people have said, the court didn't even have the constitutional authority to do what it did. Some of the Antonin Scalia and others made that point very clear. They didn't have the constitutional authority, and the court can't make law. They can only render an opinion, which then brings it down to say, what actually did they do? Did they make law? If it is, how can they make law if only Congress can make a national law? And so I would like to look at this issue a little bit here relative to the whole issue of is it legal or is it lawful? And what did the court actually do, and how we should respond both as citizens, and I would say both perhaps that we should respond as legislators or governors in the various states. So folks, stay with us. We're going to come back. We're going to look at some of these issues, and I hope bring some clarity, some areas of confusion. You're listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr and David Kistler. Stay with us, and we'll be right back after these announcements.
This is Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, and I'm thrilled to announce that BJU Press, the Christian homeschool curriculum leader, has come alongside APN as a national sponsor of Stand in the Gap today. Together, we share a commitment to further a true biblical worldview and to follow Jesus' command to be salt and light to the culture. BJU Press provides academically sound educational materials designed to fully equip children for college and the workplace. As postmodern culture seeks to eliminate God from the classroom, BJU Press integrates biblical truth into curricula that's accurate, dependable, and exceeds all national academic standards. APN welcomes BJU Press as a national partner and sponsor of Stand in the Gap Today. If you're a parent and want to find out more, visit BJU Press online at bjupresshomeschool.com or by calling 800-845-5731. Again, we at APM welcomes BJU Press as a national partner as together we work to instill Christian values in the generations to follow.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? But the only part we're reading in 8th grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, we the people, didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
The Constitution preserves the advantage of being armed, which Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, where the governments are afraid to trust the people with arms. A quote from James Madison.
Hi, this is Nancy Becker, the Recorder of Deeds in Montgomery County. I'd like to read a quote from Mark Twain. In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, and brave, and hated, and scorned. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, and then it costs nothing to be a patriot.
As stated by Edmund Burke, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, welcome back to Stand in the Gap Today. This is Sam Rohr and David Kistler today, holding down this fort. Gary Dahl is away at a funeral today, so he's occupied, but we're glad to be here with you. For those of you who are with us in the first part of the program, we set up where we're going to go, and that is to try and take some of these confusing issues that have come forth as a result of the recent Supreme Court rulings. which I believe have thrown much of concerned America, freedom-loving Americans, into a little bit of a temporary pause. I think it's temporary, but a temporary pause in trying to understand exactly what happened, and then where do we go from there? Because we must have some clarity. We must have a direct path forward, and I think we can establish that. Before we went away on this break, I mentioned, Dave, the idea that the court doesn't have the constitutional authority to make law. That's not the purpose of judicial branch. They render opinions. But this one seems to be viewed as law, even though Congress retains the power to make law. And I brought up the issue of the distinctive between that which is lawful and that which is legal. Now, folks listening may not say, I've never thought about that before. Matter of fact, I was talking to a constitutional attorney not too long ago, yesterday, and I brought up that question. He said, you know what, Sam? He said, we agree on all the issues. He said, I don't know that I've ever thought about that either. I said, I've got to think about that. Lawful versus legal, because that does make a difference. Want to take a first shot at the distinction there, Dave?
Well, Sam, I'd be delighted to. Let me just back up and say this before I make my comments, and that is this. Sam, you are 100% correct. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of discouragement going on across the United States of America on the part of those who believe in what we sometimes call traditional marriage. It's really the biblical definition of marriage between one man and one woman. And on Sunday, the pastor for whom I was speaking said, Dave, I'm just going to be candid with you. I have been discouraged since the Supreme Court issued its ruling on Friday. He said, can you help me and can you help our people by commenting on this before you preach? And I said, well, I'd be thrilled to. And I tried to draw out some of the things that we are going to be talking about more specifically today to be an encouragement. And so I want to underscore what you said earlier. If there are those that are listening to the program, they have a friend, a family member, or someone maybe that goes to the same church that's been discouraged about this, this will be a great time for you to pick up your phone, give them a call, tell them to tune in, because some of what we're going to be sharing, I think, is going to be very, not only enlightening, but very encouraging. Now, let me go to the question you asked, Sam, the distinction between legal and lawful. And I want to cite this biblical example. In Mark chapter number 6, verse number 18, we have an account where John the Baptist directly confronted Herod, who had married his brother Philip's wife. And there's a whole story there. And by the way, Sam, I was just in the Holy Land last week, and this entire scenario was discussed in great detail as we were by the Sea of Tiberias, where Herod had a summer palace. And we talked about this entire scenario, how Herod had seduced his brother Philip's wife, and he had taken her to be his wife, and all the conflict that surrounded that. And the King James Version says this, "For John had said to Herod, 'It is not lawful for you to have your brother Philip's wife.'" Now, from the King James Version, it sounds like John had said it one time to Herod, but literally, the original language carries a continuous action. Literally, John had been saying, he had been repeatedly saying to Herod, which is an interesting point in and of itself. We preachers have a responsibility, not just to say one time, but repeatedly say to those that are in authority, those that are serving in a governmental position, we have an obligation, Sam, to tell them what's right and wrong. And Herod had been told that by John the Baptist. John had been repeatedly saying, "It is not lawful." He didn't use the word legal. He used the word lawful. See, in Roman times, there were a lot of things that had been declared legal. Immorality was the norm at that time in Rome, much like immorality is the norm today in America. But just because something is legal does not necessarily at all mean that it is lawful. And when John used the term lawful, he's appealing to the highest law possible, and that is God's law. So, Sam, what happened on Friday coming out of the high court? This opinion, and that is the correct term. You have nailed it. It is an opinion. This opinion that same-sex marriage ought to be allowed in all 50 states, and pitch these state amendments to constitutions that define marriage between one man and one woman. Pitch all of that. Disregard all of that. This is our opinion, said five of the Supreme Court justices, that this ought to be allowed. That may be perceived to be legal, but it is in no sense of the word, from God's perspective, and really, Sam, from a constitutional perspective, it is not lawful.
And see, Dave, that is the point here. There is higher moral law, which is God's definition of marriage. They don't have the authority to change it. They attempted to do so, and on paper they did, but they didn't change the reality of what God's law is. So that is therefore not lawful what they did. On the other hand, they actually exceeded their constitutional authority by crossing over and violating the sovereign rights of the states relative to these laws on the books there, and as represented by the dissenting opinion of some of the court justices, like some of the justices that were there, a group of them. They also recognized there was no constitutional authority to do that either. So therefore, it's not even constitutionally lawful in what they did, and it hangs there. Unless challenged, and we'll get into what that challenge can be in a bit, it may have an effect of being legal, but it's not lawful. You know, Dave, when I was in the Pennsylvania House years ago, I remember on a couple of occasions standing up on the floor of the House during critical debates, and when we were discussing about passing a law that was not legitimate, really, trying to engage in causing certain people to do certain things or whatever that was not really right, and I said on the floor on many occasions, we may have the power to make this law and force these changes on people, but we don't have the moral right, which was the same idea. We can make it legal, but we cannot make it lawful. So there's an aspect of what the court did, which I think all of us should back up and say, all right, there is a higher moral law and there is a higher constitutional law, both of which this court violated. So it may be legal, but it's not lawful. Now, Dave, that comes back to this. We're talking already about two components, constitutional and moral. Lay this out for us just a little bit further as far as how we should view all of these things in these two categories, at least.
Well, Sam, let me start with a constitutional component. As you well said, there are three branches to our government. We have an executive branch, we have a judicial branch, and we have a legislative branch. The Constitution spells out the jurisdictional authority of each of those branches of government, and the lawmaking body is the legislative branch. We talk about judicial activism. We talk about a rogue court stepping outside their jurisdiction, their realm of authority, and doing things that the Constitution does not give them the right to do. And that's exactly what has happened here. When you have a court making law instead of interpreting law, then you have a problem. And so they have stepped way outside their jurisdictional boundaries with this opinion that they rendered on Friday of last week. So Sam, we have a civil constitutional dilemma here. Much more so, we have a moral dilemma here. The defining of marriage, the participants in marriage, all the various aspects of that, before there ever was a United States of America, before there ever was civil law, God instituted this thing called marriage. So for any body of human beings to think they can intrude into that and correct, change, usurp what God has said marriage is to be is not only arrogant, it is a lot of other things as well. So what this court did, or at least five members of the high court, was morally outside their jurisdictional authority, and it was certainly constitutionally outside their jurisdictional authority.
Absolutely. So folks, as you're listening here, we got these two components. Every aspect of law, this could be a little bit of instruction, every aspect of law, every law that's passed has a moral component to it and must be evaluated from that perspective. Every person who votes in a position of authority and makes a law or signs a law should evaluate and say, what is the moral underpinning for this law? Are we in violation of God's law? That should be the first question that's asked. And the second one is, because we're under a constitutional republic, does it meet the constitutional obligation? Frankly, that's why our oath of office are taken for those who are in office. So, that being the case, every issue before us has a moral component which can be argued, which is why the pastors in the pulpit have every right to speak to the issues of the day, because there is a moral component of every issue of the day that finds its way into law, and there is the constitutional component of which we are all citizens, and therefore we must understand these two components. So, Dave, do you not agree that pastors have the responsibility and the duty to speak into these two areas as an American pastor, as an American citizen?
Sam, absolutely. We have a divine obligation. And Sam, this fact of pastors speaking to these issues is clearly illustrated throughout our history. In the founding era of this nation, pastors were involved in all aspects of this, speaking God's truth, speaking constitutional truth. Once we had a constitution in this country, they spoke to all of these issues. So, yes, we have an obligation to do so in this current time.
Folks, you are listening to Sam Rohr and David Kistler as we speak about trying to bring clarity out of this issue by the Supreme Court ruling. We've touched on legal versus lawful. We're talking about the moral law component and the constitutional component underneath and why pastors need to speak. When we come back, we're going to talk about the issue of civil disobedience. Should we engage and how? Again, you're listening to Sam Rohr, Garrett, and David Kistler on Standing the Gap today. Stay with us. We will be right back.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie officially joins the 2016 presidential race, announcing he's a candidate for the Republican nomination. His campaign slogan, tell it like it is.
When I'm asked a question, I'm going to give the answer to the question that's asked, not the answer that my political consultants told me to give backstage.
The announcement in the packed, sweaty gym of the governor's old high school in Livingston, New Jersey. Today's deadline for a nuclear deal with Iran extended a week for more talks in Vienna.
Secretary of State John Kerry has been meeting again with his Iranian counterparts. Meanwhile, it's reported the UN's nuclear watchdog is about to say that Iran is playing ball when it comes to a key part of the talks, converting stockpiled uranium from a form that can be used to make explosives into a form that can't.
Fox News Radio's Simon Owen. Fox News. We report. You decide.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
Matthew 6:33 says this, "But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." I think this verse has a lot to do with us getting our priorities straight. The words come from Jesus. He said, "Look, you can worry about food or drink or clothing like the non-believer, or you can worry about number one thing." Listen, if you are attempting to be a good steward, we must not forget that in our stewardship, as the great hymn says, we must first turn our eyes upon Jesus.
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back. This is Sam Rohr and David Kistler today. And I just want to encourage all of you who are listening today. You hear these commercials during the breaks. I encourage you to participate with and and pursue the using of the services provided. BJU Press, as an example, is a major sponsor of APN and this radio program. They're the largest producers of biblical worldview Christian educational curriculum in the country. Great for homeschooling, great for Christian school. Take advantage of that. Check into it. Life Financial Group is another that you'll hear on here that provide a complete array of financial services from a biblical perspective to folks, from a trust to wills to that kind of thing. Be aware of these, and I encourage you to participate. It helps us on this program. It helps them, and it will help yourself as well. So, Dave, I thought it was interesting that in the bottom of the hour break right there on Fox News, we heard about another presidential candidate jumping into the race. Chris Christie from New Jersey. You talked about John Kasich from Ohio. And I want to come back to you with a quick question right here. John Kasich, you remember at the beginning, said that let's move on from this issue of the Supreme Court rulings of last week. Let's get on past these issues. Let's pretend they're not here. We're done with them. Let's move on to the economic issues. I want to ask you a question. Is it legitimate for those who are listening to this program and Christians across the country to take special note of those presidential candidates who make such comments and avoid this issue? Is it something that we should expect they do not run from, but actually run into and clarify on these issues of the Constitution and moral law?
Well, Sam, yes, the answer is we do need to take note of those that are saying, hey, look, this is like beating a dead horse, you know, this issue of same-sex marriage. There are many, Sam, that would love to do this with the marriage issue, with the abortion issue. Look, those are relics of a former time. Those are dinosaurs. Let's push those into the past. Let's deal with the issues that the American people are really concerned about, and that's the economic side of things. Look, I'm not minimizing economics. You know, economy is important, but, Sam, it is not the most important. This is akin to saying what was repeated many, many times during the Bill Clinton presidency that, you know, who cares what the man does in his private time? Who cares what he does in the Oval Office? Who cares that he is involved with an intern? That's his private life. That in no way affects his ability to make decisions as the president of the United States. Sam, that is lunatic thinking. A man's morality, of course, affects his decision making. And so a nation that is making decisions nationally like a man, an individual would make them individually, a nation that is endorsing evil, i.e. the ruling that came out of the Supreme Court on Friday, a nation that is doing that cannot expect to have God's blessing on it. So who cares in one sense about the economic issues? What about the underpinnings of everything? And that's the moral foundation of our nation. So if we have leaders or potential leaders, men and women that we are considering possibly casting a ballot for to be our next president, if they're not interested in the moral underpinnings, then in one sense, Sam, we shouldn't be interested in them.
I agree. And I'll go further. We talked about it in the last segment here, that every civil law, economic law or policy has a moral underpinning. I mean, do we not think for a moment that there is immoral economic policy? I mean, a federal government that takes and spends money on things that they shouldn't be spending is an immoral proposition. Anyone who takes the private labor of someone who earns their money and confiscates it through taxation is biblically immoral. So Dave, I'll just follow up. What you're saying is that it's not possible to talk about economics without talking about the moral underpinning. And yes, I agree with you. If they're not willing to talk about that, they're not qualified for the presidency. Now, let's move on here, if we can, to the next question. I set it up before we went away for the break. There are many that are now talking, and if folks are listening to folks being interviewed and so forth, you're hearing this commentary of civil disobedience. The court has made a ruling. We've talked about that. It's an opinion, that's not law per se, but it has an effect of color of law, put it that way. But there are many now talking about, well, we've got to be now further engaged and prepared to be engaged in civil disobedience, which raises with it a specter of all kinds of negative and nasty things. But put this in context, Dave, with you. Civil disobedience, I would say perhaps versus biblical obedience. Is there a difference, and how should we view this?
Well, Sam, there is a difference, and let me use this illustration. In fact, let me just kind of lay the groundwork. We get the basis biblically for this concept we are talking about of civil disobedience from primarily two passages in the scriptures, one Old Testament passage, one New Testament passage. The Old Testament passage is Daniel chapter number 3, where a group of young men were asked to bow down and worship a pagan image. Of course, these young men were committed to the God of heaven, and the scripture says, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, thou shalt not bow down to them and serve them. And so they had a higher obligation to obey God and obey God's explicit commands in the scripture. And so they refused to bow down. That is called in some circles civil disobedience. The New Testament passage is Acts 5:29, where Peter and John were told to stop preaching and teaching in the name of Jesus. It was a governmental mandate that was given to them. They said, we ought to obey God rather than men. We have a higher obligation to obey God. So I'm sorry, we're going to continue to speak the name of Jesus because we've been commanded by God to do so. That is sometimes referred to as civil disobedience. I think the correct terminology, Sam, is the term that you just used, and that is biblical obedience trumps any other man-made demand or man-made law. Let me use this illustration. We hear a condemnation constantly of discrimination. You cannot discriminate. You cannot discriminate. Sam, let me say this. When I chose my wife, Betsy, who is the love of my life, when I chose her to be my wife, I discriminated against every other woman out there. Now, my discrimination was not out of any hatred toward any other woman. It's just that my love for Betsy trumps any interest or any affection I would have for any other woman. So it causes me, in a sense, to discriminate against every other woman. But it's because of the positive love I have for her, everything else is of no interest to me. So when we talk about our love for God being so significant that we are committed to biblically obey Him, then it of the very essence of what we're talking about, that requires that we disobey some man-made laws or man-made mandates. But the emphasis is on our love for God, our love for His Word, our commitment to His truth that causes us to say, because I'm going to stay faithful to Him, like I'm going to stay faithful to my wife, then I will reject other things that are contrary to Him and to His Word. So biblical obedience causes us to at times have to practice what we refer to as civil disobedience.
I agree with you. And I think, you know, from my own mind, I've tried to work this thing through myself, Dave, and say, you know, for me personally, and I think probably any Christian, what's the higher motivation? Well, the highest motivation for me is glorifying God. That's what a Christian ought to do. And it is biblical obedience. We've talked here about the need for revival and repentance in America, and we often quote 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways and so forth, that whole verse, that really has to do with obedience. So if we think in terms of obedience equals God's blessing, and therefore that's where I go, it places within my heart, I believe, for at least me, anyways, and I think the strength of understanding what's behind our decision when we have to say no, perhaps to some civil authority, that in fact we are pleasing God. We're not going out with the intent of angering men. And I think there's an attitude there that is there. So I'm wanting to use that word biblical obedience, even though it may result in civil disobedience. I think it telegraphs a message to the world as well as our own heart. So I thank you for dealing with that, Dave, on that perspective. Now, one other issue that I want to bring up as we complete this section here is that when we talk about the court making an opinion, not the law, and you rightly talked about the separation of powers, Congress, you know, the legislative and the civil and executive branch, you also have the states, Dave. The states are an authority. They pre-existed the federal government. Some governors, like Governor Abbott, stand up and say, signed a law saying Pastor Protection Act. Governor Jindal talked about, you're not going to come in and force us to do that in this state. Roy Moore, Chief Justice Roy Moore, has said in the past that, wait a minute, this is not lawful what you have done. Lay up for us here, unpack for us, if you could, the power of authority versus authority, and as may being the piece that actually determines whether or not this court's opinion actually becomes, in effect, the law, or whether it's actually challenged appropriately.
Well, Sam, as you said, when this country first started, we had 13 colonies. They became the first 13 states. And so states had rights well before there was even a thing called the federal government. And even after the federal government was established, states still had jurisdictional authority, and they still do have jurisdictional authority. So what we have now is the federal government, via the decision made at the High Court on Friday, that was that decision that was handed down relative to same-sex marriage, that now is running in direct contradiction to what 33 states have said they believe to be the case relative to marriage, be that through legislation or state amendments to state constitutions. So now we have an authority versus authority conflict. And when we come back from the break, Sam, we'll delve further into that and what all that means.
That is excellent, because that's a good place to leave it. That is something that we would encourage, folks, authority versus authority. There is a way out from this challenge by the court. This is Sam Rohr and David Kistler on Stand in the Gap Today. Stay with us. We will be back, and we'll conclude this and pick up another major issue upon the conclusion of this program in just a few minutes.
Blessed is a man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask of God, who gives generously to all. This is Roy Russell, president of the Life Financial Group, online at thelifegroup.org. For nearly 40 years, we have worked with believers and especially widows across the nation. We all need wisdom as it relates to our finances, taxes, and estate planning, but no one more than the widow who must manage on her own. We are financial advisors committed to a biblical worldview. We assist with your income taxes and give advice to help keep your taxes low. We also carefully invest your money to provide a comfortable retirement income, and we work closely with Christian attorneys to draft a believer's will and powers of attorney. Please call me with your questions or to discuss your needs and desires at 800-688-5800. That's 1-800-688-5800, or online at thelifegroup.org. That's thelifegroup.org.
Securities and advisory services offered through Genios Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing, as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
What was the first settlement in North America? Was it Jamestown or Plymouth? Actually, it was Fort Caroline near St. John's River in Florida. It was founded this day, June 30th, 1564, by the French Protestants known as Huguenots, and was the first attempt at religious toleration in America. A settler recorded, "We sang a psalm of thanksgiving unto God, beseeching him to continue his accustomed goodness toward us." Unfortunately, the French colony was short-lived. The Spanish, whose treasure ships passed that route, destroyed it, butchering hundreds of men and taking captive the women and children.
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
When a nation embraces evil and rejects good, when evildoers are commended while Christians are maligned, it's time to understand the reason. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. The Apostle Paul tells us in Romans 1 that people once knowing the truth of God, experiencing the blessing of God, and who through science and technology uncover the mysteries of creation but then reject the truth and refuse to give God the glory, God will wipe his hands of these people and remove his mercy from them.
He will give them up to general sexual perversion, then to deviant sexual attractions, including homosexuality, then to a reprobate mind, so that they not only can do all the evil they want, but also experience all the dire consequences of their sin. I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network, saying that rejecting God and His truth is fatal. For me, I prefer to glorify God, thank Him for all He's done, and be blessed by Him. How about you?
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back to our final segment here. This is Sam Rohr and David Kistler today, trying to bring some clarity out of the chaos created by the recent court decisions. We have talked about the difference between legal versus lawful. We have talked about the court rendering an opinion, not making law. We've talked about the importance of really pursuing the concept of biblical obedience versus civil disobedience. We talked about the issue that you just can't move on and talk about economic issues and forget these important things. Then we concluded here just a little bit ago with Dave, you talking about the importance of the states in their capacities as authorities weighing in against what this court has said. Build that out just a little bit more for us before we go on to the final subject.
Well, Sam, if I could say this, and this will be a little bit of a constitutional lesson, but what our founders were aiming for with states having authority versus a federal government having authority, they were aiming for a thing that some have called dual federalism. That is where the federal government has authority, states have authority, and in essence, those two authorities are about equal. You have to have a tad stronger federal authority for the 50 states to stay together and have a United States of America. But basically, they were aiming for dual federalism. What we have now degenerated into, Sam, is what I'm going to call coercive federalism, where you have a coercive federal government dictating to states. And let me give an example of that. The unfunded mandate in Obamacare is a classic example of coercive federalism. Here is a federal entity dictating to states, you must do this, you must do that, when the states are saying, hey, we don't even want to do this. So that is something totally contrary to what our founders envisioned. So when it comes to this issue of marriage, again, we have an example of a coercive federal government, a coercive federal entity, i.e. the Supreme Court, dictating to some 33 states, we don't care what your laws in your state say, we don't care what your state constitutional amendments say about the definition of marriage, we are going to try to dictate to you that you have to operate this way, you have to accept same-sex marriage, you have to have magistrates in your state that issue same-sex marriage licenses. That is as contrary to Sam as it could possibly be to what our founders envisioned. When a governor of a state or an attorney general of a state swears on the authority of the scriptures, laying their hand on a Bible and say, I promise to uphold the laws of the state of North Carolina, West Virginia, Tennessee, Texas, Pennsylvania, whatever, they take an oath to uphold the laws of that state. When you have a state like Alabama, North Carolina, and a host of others who have amendments to their constitution that define marriage between a man and a woman, then a conscientious state leader cannot just say, well, I've just forget about that and now comply with this opinion that's come from the high court. No, that's why you have men like Judge Roy Moore saying, wait a minute, I've got a dilemma here. That's why you have men like Greg Abbott in Texas saying, wait a minute, I swore to uphold the laws of my state and we're going to continue to do that. So you have an authority versus authority conflict. And so that's why I say, Sam, to people that ask me, this issue's not over. this issue is not over yet when you have this kind of conflict between two opposing authorities.
And folks, this is something that you can do. You say, what can we do? Well, you can contact your legislators. You can contact those on state government level of perspective, the governor, attorney generals. Some of them clearly have already identified with an unconstitutional perspective, and they won't, but some of them will. It doesn't take all of the governors of the states to stand up and challenge. It takes some. If they roll over, Dave, confirming what you're saying, if they roll over and in their capacities do not challenge, then in fact this opinion becomes de facto law. If they challenge it and say, no, you cannot, it does exactly what the constitutional provisions were intended by our founders to do, and it is the best and the quickest way, I think, to challenge the constitutional aspect, unconstitutional aspect of what this court has done. So, folks, there is hope. We must pray about all of these things. We must, with courage, go forward, stand on the truth, operate on the truth, understand the Constitution still is in effect, regardless of what the court has done, and that God's law hasn't changed a bit. On these two things, we should stand and go forward confidently. Now, Dave, I'm going to switch gears here just in the last couple of moments, because I think we need to mention this. I want to mention on a bad note, but we got to mention it because it's out there in the news. The FBI has issued a warning. Ex-Deputy CIA Director Morrell has underscored it, that it's a serious matter relative to potential ISIS threats here across the world during Ramadan. Here in these United States over the 4th of July weekend. And it kind of ties together with an article that you just came up across that talks about this significantly larger group of Muslims worldwide who seem to be weighing in favor of these kinds of atrocities. You may want to mention it, then we'll kind of bring it around before we close the program.
You bet, Sam. I'd be delighted to do that. Yes, there is a report that has just been released that says the global support for ISIS is much larger than was previously believed, and according to this report, as many as 42 million, Sam, 42 million Muslims around the world have positive feelings toward the black-clad army of barbarians that is now known as ISIS. And the report that I'm referring to is from the New York-based research institute Clarion Project, is what it's called. And they crunched the numbers from four recent polls surveying Arab public opinion toward ISIS, and then came up with this astronomical number of 42 million Muslims around the globe that support ISIS and what ISIS is trying to do. Now, Sam, think of this: 1.5 billion Muslims, at least. Around the globe, 42 million of them have positive feelings and support what ISIS is trying to do. Sam, that is a huge number. And then when you factor that into what the FBI has released as far as a warning, for the upcoming July 4th weekend, that is an alarming thing. It's not something about which we should just be overwhelmed with fear, but it should say to us this: as we enter into this 4th of July weekend, we need to go on with our activities. We need to go ahead and walk in the confidence of the Lord, but we do need to keep our eyes and ears open. If we see something that seems out of the ordinary or unusual, we certainly need to report it, and report it immediately.
Dave, we do need to bear in mind and keep in prayer those who are out there in law enforcement, who are around gatherings and so forth there to protect, because a part of this threat by ISIS was actually against local law enforcement, among other things. As Morrell said, he said, I wouldn't be surprised if we'd be sitting here a week from today, which was yesterday, talking about an attack. He said, this is not the normal thing. And I don't like to bring these kind of things up, but I think we should when it's there. The call to arms during Ramadan, June 17 to July 17th, is an issue. That's one reason why he says it's significant. The second is because of those three attacks, Tunisia, Kuwait, and France, that occurred all in one day, concerted. And the fact that in this nation there have been 50 of those arrested local-grown ISIS folks here in this country. So, folks, be aware of these things, not to be alarmed, but be aware. We trust in the Lord, and that's where our trust is, but we have to have our eyes open at the same time. So we are thrilled that you spent the time with us today on Stand in the Gap today with Dave Kistler and myself. We're thrilled to have you spent this time. We ask you to join with us tomorrow. As we come back again, Gary Dahl and I will host the program tomorrow as we pick up on another list of key issues of the day from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Thanks for being with us. This is Sam Rohr on behalf of David Kistler and Gary Dahl saying, God bless you all.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Taken from Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address, March 4, 1801.